Dad, you know how you were saying I need to do more, be more, the whole fast fiber thing?
Yes.
Anyways, I saw that Vox is offering free standard installation and activation to the value of 3,000 rand.
That is a good deal.
With the money you save, I can buy some new skins for Fortnite. Talk about money in the bank.
With free activation to the value of 3,000 rand. Live smart. Hack life. Level up with Vox Fiber. Visit vox.co.za. T's and C's apply.
I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 255 for the week starting 31 March 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. WhatsApp the show. The number to use is 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, we talk Apple's big services keynote.
Also on the show this week, EOH's share price continues to plumb new depths, CETA's CEO steps down, and MTN's bosses rake in rich rewards.
It's Sunday afternoon. It's 1 p.m. We're live streaming at live.techcentral.co.za, and it's time to talk everything tech.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. We were going to have a discussion about the new FPB amendment bill today, Films and Publications amendment bill, but our guest has gone MIA, so we're going to hoping to get him on the show next week to talk about that very important piece of draft legislation. But there is plenty else to talk about this week, including that big Apple Services keynote, which took, when was it now? It was...
last Monday.
It was on Monday, yeah. So we're going to dive into that and everything else that's been happening this week. But before we do that, let's do our quiz.
The first question. Who was this week appointed as interim ICASA chair following the axing of Ruben Mohlacha?
And Naspers this week announced it would list its international internet assets on which stock exchange in a bid to unlock shareholder value?
Who has replaced Setumo Mohapi as CEO at the state agency on an interim basis?
And how much, including bonuses, was MTN Group CEO Rob Shooter paid in the 2018 financial year, according to its annual report?
And the final question. Standard Bank Group this week said it would partner with which technology company as it looks to move many of its IT systems into the cloud?
Big story that. We'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show, but let's dive into this week's news. And Apple was certainly the big trending international story this week. Did you watch the keynote, Richard?
No, I kind of watched highlights afterwards. You know, these things kind of ramble on after.
Yeah, you didn't. They do, and you didn't miss terribly much.
Yeah, I normally jump on like half an hour afterwards because then you can scrub through the first, you know, little bits. And
yeah, with Tim Cook going on about how wonderful Apple is.
Yeah, exactly.
Fast forward.
We know that, right?
But I was a bit disappointed, I must say. We knew what was coming. This was going to be an exclusively services-based announcement. In fact, they announced new products in the week ahead of this keynote, which was an interesting move by Apple. First keynote they've ever done where they haven't announced new hardware, as far as I know. And the week before, they announced, what did they announce? New iMacs, product refreshes, new iPad, all done on through press releases and announced on their website rather than through anything more formal. The new iPad Air looks quite nice, I must say. It fills a nice gap in the market between the entry-level iPad and the new iPad Pro models. It's probably going to do very well. But this event was purely about services. It was about announcing their intentions to get into the video streaming market to take on Netflix. It was about launching a streaming video game service, and it was about launching a newspaper and magazine subscription bundle service called News Plus. The credit card, the Apple Pay credit card for use where pay with your, which apparently, by the way, doesn't support tap and go payments, which I thought was a bit interesting, a bit silly.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and it's a very interesting play by them. Getting into the financial market, they've got the customer base. They're just kind of wanting to, I think, make more money off each transaction. That's probably the bottom line in reality, but it's also kind of really good value add if you've already owned the customer, right? If
yes.
you can, and from what I believe, they're giving very good rates to people.
Yes. Yeah. So, but let's talk about the big announcements, and I think the biggest was probably the announcement about We just got a message here from our guest. He might be joining us in a moment. So
nice.
if he does jump in, we will talk about that Films and Publications Amendment Bill. But let's carry on talking about Apple in the meantime. The big announcement, obviously, the video streaming service, although we don't have key details yet. We don't know how much it's going to cost, for example. And that'll be critical. We do know that they've said it's coming to over 100 markets, so we can assume that South Africa will be included in that.
Yeah.
What else? They partnered with various actors and directors to launch some shows. The shows that they announced didn't particularly grab me, I must say, and I think they're going to have an uphill battle competing directly with Netflix.
Yeah, and again, you know, you have to be on the ecosystem, right?
So, yeah.
You know, I can't put this on my TV because I've got a laptop not on my TV, not a Mac. So even if I do this on my iPad, which is the only Mac device I have, I wouldn't. It's not a value proposition for me. If you're an Apple fan, maybe. Again, you know, I always say people are going to have two or three streaming services. So people probably have Netflix and this and ditch something else, you know. Mm. It's probably more of a threat to some American based channels or some US based stations. But they include the likes of HBO and Showtime. So, you know, in the States, it's a good value proposition. Elsewhere for us, probably not so much.
Mm. Yeah, I thought it was really silly of Apple actually to not make it available on the web, for example, or to develop apps for Android and other platforms. But they clearly see this as a value-added service for Apple users more than anything else. Now, they are making it available on Samsung and LG and I think Sony smart TVs. And I think on Roku boxes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So, they're pushing their Apple TV system, right? So you don't have to have an iPhone, but once you get an Apple TV, you kind of want to get an iPhone. So they kind of convert you from all angles here. It's a very clever marketing tactic, and it's one you would expect a company to do if they want to, I guess, dominate everything.
Yeah, but from my perspective, there's no way I'd go. Even if I liked the look of the programming, I'm not planning to buy Apple hardware to watch it.
No, I agree. But I think, you know, there are so many people that is loving that ecosystem, and they have everything. They have the watch, they have the phone, they have the Apple TV. We know those people.
That's true in the States, but outside the States, in South Africa, Apple is not very widely distributed. Apple iPhone penetration here is tiny. iPad penetration is probably much tinier still. I'd venture that it's a tiny percentage of households that have Apple TVs installed in them.
Well, I mean, if you look at the card announcement and everything they really do, that the US is their market, right? Mm. It's a market that they do everything for. The iPhone was made for that market, and then kind of spilled out and became a bigger thing. I think this is we're seeing what happens when a company is really good at what it does, and it's just kind of expanding services and taking on new industries where it's seeing it can make profit.
Yes,
it might not be of interest to us. I think because those shows will inevitably make their way onto other channels. They will get licensed eventually to other places. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
If not, then you know we've got other stuff to watch. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to have to wait a few months to find out more details about this. I suspect that they're going to announce this around the time of the launch of the iPhone 11. We'll have to wait and see. It's early days, but I must say I'm not blown away so far.
No, I agree with you. The most interesting part of that announcement for me was the Apple Arcade, actually, the gaming stuff. I thought that was that kind of the Netflix of a gaming mobile device gaming service is pretty interesting and very compelling, especially if you look at the quality of the games on the Apple platform. So now all of a sudden you can pay one price, which they unfortunately haven't disclosed yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, if you're on the Apple ecosystem, it's now becoming, you know, you're getting a lot of value now, even though you're paying for that value as a service every month. But there's a lot of cool things you can do if you've got all the Apple stuff. But again, from a gamer's point of view, it'll be interesting to see what they do and how they execute, but I can't be on the market for that because I don't have Apple devices anymore.
Yeah. And so they announced the gaming streaming thing as well. Was there anything terribly exciting there? It's going to be game title exclusives. And there was a piece, I think, on The Verge that suggested that Apple kind of had to do this because the App Store has become so polluted with these sort of free to try and then in-game purchases and ads and all that sort of thing that many people have become disillusioned with it. The idea behind this game streaming service is that it's not actually streaming. It's a subscription service where you get access to titles and you don't have to be online to play them. But the idea is they have curated games that don't have in-app purchases and in-app advertising. I suppose it might be compelling if the games are good.
Yeah, look, and because I've gotten this platform that they've enhanced and built for this, you know, we definitely, and they've got purpose-built games for this platform, you know, special storylines or improved storylines apparently and graphics. So I'm sure the experience will be great for mobile gamers. But again, you're going to be locked in on an Apple device, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of those games aren't going to make it onto the general store. Perhaps they will if the developers are able to kind of port the existing games to both platforms, Android and iPhone, with this new Apple Arcade platform. But we've got so much option, right? As a gamer, Steam alone will keep anybody happy for decades, you know. Then we've got good old games if you want some good old retro games.
Yeah.
It's a very tough market. I wonder how the developers are going to make money if there's no in-app purchases and it's an all-you-can-eat gaming service.
Well, the subscription, so I suppose Apple's going to determine it based on amount of gameplay per game and apportion it out to the developers. I don't know if that model makes sense for the game developers. Presumably it has to, otherwise they won't develop for it.
I don't think it makes 100% sense, but I think it has the added benefit of bringing kind of numbers because people are more likely to then play the games. It's the same as music streaming services, right? We know, unfortunately, the artists get the worst end of that deal. They're not getting as much money as what they should be. I mean, that's kind of a fact from all the streaming services. If you look at the numbers that some of these artists have put out there, I think it's just about being on the platform, getting numbers, and using it as a platform, you know, on other platforms. So using it as a springboard platform to get your games out there and get your brand out there.
Mm. And the magazine subscription, similar idea, magazines and newspapers, Apple News Plus, I think it's called. Some notable titles absent from it, including the New York Times. The Wall Street Journal is in there, plus a whole range of the magazines that you expect, like Wired and general interest magazines, tech magazines, that sort of thing. I like the idea of paying $10 a month and getting access to 300 titles, provided, you know, at least 3 or 4 or 5 of those titles are titles I want to read. You know, it's something you'd have to consider quite carefully. But certainly it could be beneficial especially if you already read a lot of magazines. You know, I quite like the model. I may end up subscribing, assuming it comes to South Africa.
Yeah, look, if you've got that beautiful iPad Pro, now magazine articles, again, you know, the layout is designed for that type of thing. There's a few other apps that does this service. Texture, I think, is one of them. Zunio for the local guys. I like it. I don't subscribe to one at the moment. I don't sit and read magazines as much. I just consume my content online. But I do like it. There's nothing. There's a lot of benefits, I guess, to reading good content. If you read a good magazine, like, you know, Rolling Stone, that's a cool magazine to read some nice kind of current affairs type of content on.
Yeah.
That you won't necessarily find online. And also the layout and the way the images are shot and placed in the magazine, it's kind of different to
reading a website.
To the website,
I like magazines. A really well-designed magazine, you can see a lot of effort has gone into that, into the typography, into the photography, into the way the text and the pictures are aligned, clever headline writing. A beautifully designed magazine is a piece of art.
But we're also a little bit biased because we're both from that era, right? I mean, I cut my teeth on washing proofs for magazines, you know. I think that we appreciate the art in that, but I think it's curated content, right? And that is what the internet lacks in a lot of places, because everything is open to you, so you don't really get presented curated content as much unless you only read one source, like if you go to a New York Times or something and kind of get your stuff from there. But I like the magazine format. I like the, you know, it doesn't always have to be the latest current affairs. It's well thought out pieces that require a little bit more, you know, you don't need, always need the breaking stuff. And I think we get kind of swayed by that. We just read the first few headlines and we never get back to that article.
Yeah. So again, proof will be in the pudding, but it sounds like an interesting idea. So I look forward to seeing more about it closer to the launch date. So that's it, really. That's Apple's services announcement in a nutshell. The next big Apple event is likely to be WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference, which usually happens around June, I think latish June. And that's where we'll see the first preview release of iOS 13, which I'm really looking forward to because apparently big changes are coming to the iPad version of the software, and I think that's long overdue, including a complete change to the home screen. They need to bring more productivity-orientated features into the iPad to make it more PC-like, I think, more like a personal computer for work, doing day-to-day work, especially with that, if you attach a keyboard and a mouse to it. I think that that iOS needs quite a lot of work, and I think a lot of reviewers have pointed that out.
And then,
of course, after that, we've got the iPhone launch, which usually happens sometime in September. And we're looking forward to seeing the what's rumored to be called the iPhone XI or the iPhone 11.
Or the foldable iPhone XI?
No, I don't think Apple's a conservative company.
They will never do that. Yeah, they will never do that.
The rumor is it's going to have a triple camera set up on the back. It looks not dissimilar, interestingly enough, to the Huawei Mate 20 Pro. So, in many respects, Apple is a follower now of the Android world. I know that's a controversial statement, especially for Apple users.
Sorry, so you broke up there for a second. I actually couldn't hear the last statement you made.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying that the Apple is now a follower of the Android world. Apple fans won't appreciate that statement, but I think it's true. I think it's true. The Android world is now leading in innovation, not necessarily in software. I think there's possibly an argument to be made that iOS is still a better phone operating system than Android. But in terms of hardware innovations, I think the Android world has overtaken them.
And let's be honest, it's what we have with Windows as well back in the day, or still today. It's you have more diversity within the hardware because more people would develop for it. So it's exciting.
And there's lots of innovation happening there. And if you look at if you look at the Mate 20 Pro, and then if you look at the new Samsung Galaxy S10 and S10 Plus, that shows you where smartphones are going. And I think Apple is going to have no choice but to copy the Samsung later this year by putting in the pinhole camera on the front and the screen, and getting rid of that awful notch, and putting in a triple camera system on the rear, which has become the standard now in high end Android handsets.
Yeah, it's fantastic to finally. I mean, we're kind of getting to a place now where it's. It's still a boring piece of glass now, but we're starting to see some interesting developments. At least there's something new on the horizon with foldable. I mean, as they don't look as good as what they should, I think, yet. But you know, again, with the pinhole idea, we're seeing a lot of interesting things. At least we're seeing some interesting things in the industry. Mm. For me, the Apple is still very expensive, right? Still a pretty pricey. If you are within the ecosystem, so if you've got the hardware, the notebook, the phone, the watch, compared to the price you'll spend likely for Android equivalents or non-Apple versions of those hardware. I mean, we know that.
Yeah, without a doubt. Although the Android flagships have been creeping up in price as well. They're still not quite as expensive as Apple's offerings.
Yeah. No, they're still not. I mean, they still lag, but I think the bang for your buck is certainly there. Even if you look at the lower end of the Android smartphone, you know, you get some really nice 5-inch screen devices or 6-inch screen devices that offer you everything you want.
Yeah.
You know, and most people don't need high-end hardware.
That mid-range of the Android market is actually the most exciting part of the smartphone market right now. And, you know, we tend to focus on these high-end phones and we love using them, etc. But in that mass market, in that big middle segment, in the sort of, I don't know, 5,000 to 10,000 Rand price range, there are some amazing phones now.
Yeah, didn't a brand launch this week and the name completely escapes me now, South Africa? Also, a phone that launches in that range. I want to say
Honor.
Honor, that's the one, that's it, yeah.
Honor, yeah, I think they're part of Huawei, if I'm not mistaken. Could be mistaken there, but I think they're part of Huawei. It's a Huawei sub-brand, I think.
Oh, okay, okay. Still, I mean, if it's going for a good price, you're getting it. I mean, we know Huawei's hardware is solid.
And Nokia's doing very well as well in that mid-range market. I mean, that Nokia 7 Plus, I think it's called, very competent phone at a very good price point. And there are lots of devices like that. There's the Samsung A-series. I think it's the A7. Away, Siri. Why did I say Samsung and Siri pops up in front of me? Hey, Samsung.
It's a hack.
That's an exciting segment of the market and one in which Apple does not play at all.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, something I was going to say earlier about the iPad, what they do have going for them is their hardware just lasts. So my biggest problem as an iPad user from, you know, I bought mine a few years ago. This thing is very old. It won't take the latest updates. But the hardware is still practically brand new looking. You know, it's always been the case. It looks great. The screen is still fantastic. So it's a bit of a weird conundrum that you sit with. This hardware still looks fantastic. It works well for Netflix, for example.
Yeah.
But some new apps won't work. The new software won't work. So that's Apple's biggest problem. I think with any other brand, the hardware kind of fades or kind of tends to not last as long as 5 to 6 years, you know, on the tech front.
Yeah, I don't think iPhones last that long, but I think for people drop them and they break them and stuff. But an iPad, especially an iPad that isn't lugged around with you, one that stays at home on your coffee table, they do. They just last and last and last. And it's a pity Apple doesn't, you know, I mean, kudos to Apple for actually upgrading them for as long as they do, because no one in the Android world does that. I mean, you buy an iPad today, you can expect software updates for at least the next 5 or 6 years, which is really good. What I tend to do is hang on to my iPad until the software updates stop coming, then I hand it off to someone in my family or a friend and then get the new one.
Yeah, exactly. But then you get all the calls to say, why doesn't this thing want to update to this latest app?
you pass it on to someone who doesn't have a tablet at all, and they'd be very grateful even if there aren't software updates available. And if you give them an old Android device, it's not going to be as good as an old Apple iPad.
Look, for emails, browsing, and streaming video, I mean, an old iPad still works very, very well, and that's what most people need, you know.
It's a great device if you put it in your kitchen with one of those little portable JBL speakers or something, pair them up and stream Apple Music or Spotify all day on. They can be repurposed in so many different ways. You could get rid of the magazine rack in your bathroom and put an old iPad.
Whoa, okay, let's not go there. You might want to put some wipes next to the iPad too, so you can get wipe the iPad down when you're done with it.
You know? That's true.
Unless it's only your use, you know.
Even then.
It's like the magazines in the doctor rooms. I never touch those things because everybody reads them.
Yeah. I'm the same. I see these, and they're all curled up there, and you just know some sick person has been paging through this thing. I won't touch them either. Anyway, before we get any more lavatorial on this show, let's move on to some of the other news that's been happening this week. So EOH, good grief, this company's share price. So it fell below 10 Rand this week, I think for the first time since about... In about 10 years, this share price was above 170 Rand just a couple of years ago, and now below 10 Rand. The market, I think, is starting to panic, worries that, these stories about alleged corruption coming out of the company, the Microsoft terminating their agreement with the EOH Mtombo subsidiary and now other subsidiaries within the EOH group. And I think there are concerns that, staff incentive schemes must be underwater, management incentive schemes must be underwater. How do they retain talent? You know, the intellectual property is their core business. And they've got to ensure that they keep those top skills from going to the competition. So it's tough times for EOH. But I think the biggest reason the share price has been falling in the last week or so is that they were scheduled to announce their interim financial results, and they put out a statement on the Stock Exchange News Service saying that they're delaying that by 3 weeks while they do a cleanup of the balance sheet or an investigation of the balance sheet. But that sort of thing is always very concerning. It's never positive when you delay the publication of your financial results, especially after you've already said you're going to publish them. So the results have been pushed out by 3 weeks. There's rumors in the market, who knows if they're true or not, that a big write-down might be coming. But we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks, and I think the pressure on the share price might remain until those results come out, just on investor nervousness about what might be announced, what might be coming at those results. So EOH has had a terrible time in the last couple of years, and it shows no sign of improving anytime soon. But I think all eyes will be on those financial numbers when they get reported in a couple of weeks from now. So, yeah, tough times for EOH, which I think at one point was the largest listed IT company by market capitalization on the JSE. Other interesting news this week, CETA, state IT agency, their CEO stepped down, effective from Friday. A big blow, I think, for CETA, which historically has been a very dysfunctional organization. You know, it's responsible for procurement for a range of government departments, and I think provincial and possibly local government as well. I think certainly they provide a lot of services at national level. Their CEO, Setumo Mohapi, has been in the job for the last 4 years. His contract expired at the end of this last week, and he asked the board to be relieved of his duties at a board meeting this week. I spoke to a CETA spokeswoman, Anthea Summers, who said that he's been under a lot of stress, and this has been affecting his health. And while the board wanted him to stay on for another 6 months as kind of a handover period, he asked to be relieved early. He's done a fantastic job at CETA, turning it around, cleaning out the corruption, reporting corrupt employees to the hawks for investigation. Cannot be easy dealing with that sort of situation. Coming into a dysfunctional organization, a corrupt organization, and starting to clean up, you're going to come up against vested interests. You're going to come up against nasty people. He had death threats leveled against him. But he pressed on. Everyone I've spoken to him says he's a great guy. I've met him on many occasions, very softly spoken, but very determined. And he cleaned the place up and put it on a much stronger footing. And I think the worry now is that with him stepping aside, that CETA will revert to its old ways. When I spoke to Anthea Summers, the spokeswoman for CETA, she said, no, we're on a stronger footing now. We're not going to allow this place to backslide. We are going to ensure that we build on what Setumo Mohapi has done as a CEO over the past 4 years. So I hope that's true, because prior to his arriving, there's just a succession of CEOs in and out the door every year, and the place had become dysfunctional. So I hope she's right, that they are going to put a solid, competent CEO in to replace Setumo Mohapi, and that whoever it is that replaces him continues to build on his successes. But if history is any indication, I'm not terribly hopeful. But let's hope anyway that that it doesn't backslide. It's a big loss for the public sector. He told me he's planning to go into the private sector now. I think he's had enough of government. He's done his national duty. In fact, he was called into CETA. He was redeployed from Centec, where he was the CEO. And I know that he loved Centec, the broadcasting signal distribution company. He was just getting settled in there. I know he was a big fan of the team there. He enjoyed the work at Centec. He got the call that, sorry, guy, you're going to have to go to CETA. We need you there. And reluctantly, he went across and took on that role. But I don't think he ever wanted it. I think he's. I haven't asked him this, but I kind of think he's glad to be out of there.
Yeah, I don't think it can be easy. And let's be honest, the support in a relatively corrupt environment isn't going to be on your side, right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Indeed. So someone doing very well at the moment is Rob Shooter, the group CEO of MTN. Annual report rather published this week. And of course, under corporate governance rules, JSE listed companies have to set out in some detail how much they pay their top executives, their directors, as well as their senior management. And this was disclosed in detail in the MTN Group annual report. And some pretty eye-watering numbers. So Rob Shooter was paid 42.9 million rand in the 12 months ended 31 December 2018, up from 40.6 million. So that's 83 million rand over the last two financial years. And other top executives were also very handsomely rewarded. So Schuter received a basic salary of 15.3 million rand, which was up from 11.5 the year before, which was for 10 months of work, plus another 25.3 million rand in bonuses, 1.6 million rand in post-employment benefits, and 750,000 rand in other benefits. So those are good numbers in anybody's book.
Look, those are numbers that can afford the Apple ecosystem.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So just looking through the numbers here. So their prescribed officers, basically their top management team, received total remuneration of 177 million rand in 2018. Some of the top earners included Godfrey Motsa, who's the MTN South Africa CEO, who received almost 24 million rand. Michael Fleischer, 15 million rand. He's their head of legal. And other top paid executives. I'm just looking through the list here. Big bucks these guys earn. When you see these numbers like this, a lot of people immediately say, geez, fat cats, overpaid. How do they deserve these sort of salaries, et cetera, et cetera? But at the same time, you know, while I hear that criticism, at the same time, I also hear, well, you know, these guys' skills are very rare. There are very few people who could actually run a company like MTN successfully. Maybe they deserve the money. And if the shareholders are happy to vote in favor of the remuneration policy, whose business is it ours to criticize how much these guys get paid?
Mm. Also, we need to keep in mind, you know, it's kind of pay and demand, right? There isn't enough people that can run businesses at these levels.
Mm.
If there were more people, if there were more of these, you know, seriously clever business strategists in multiple businesses growing, become CEOs. I'm sure we're seeing more of that now. Mm. But if there were more people out there, definitely. But like you said, it's not just running. It's not your average management role, right?
No. No. Certainly the numbers are eye-watering, but it's entirely possible they deserve it, and it's a matter between their shareholders and the management team. And if the shareholders aren't happy, they can vote down the remuneration policy at the at the annual general meeting. That very rarely happens, and maybe my stance needs a little bit more nuance, but at the end of the day, it's a private company. The shareholders have a say. If this is what it costs to retain this talent and the talent's worth it, then pay them that much. Maybe I'm wrong. If you want to flame me, send a WhatsApp to 071-999-111 and tell me why these guys don't deserve these sort of salaries. And that, Rechot, I think, is our show in terms of the news. Shall we move on to our regular features? Our winner this week is Naspash CEO Bob van Dijk. I think we've picked before, actually, for the unbundling of MultiChoice. But he's certainly moving quickly to restructure the Naspash group, and announcing this week that he's going to list the group's international internet businesses on Euronext Amsterdam in the Netherlands. As a further way of unlocking shareholder value for Naspash shareholders, the idea being that that Naspash had become to make up too much of the JSE, of the JSE's total value, and that institutional investors here in South Africa couldn't actually invest more in it, you know, for the risk of being too exposed to one company. So the idea is that by listing overseas, the real value of this thing will become will be unlocked. So the suggestion is that on the JSE the share price is depressed simply because people can't invest any more in this company than they already have. So I think it's a smart move. Probably do much more than the separate listing of MultiChoice to unlock shareholder value. And so certainly the share price has already started rising since the announcement was made. The listing should happen sometime in the second half of this year. At the earliest, they said, I think. That's going ahead, and it's going to be very interesting to see what sort of valuation European investors put on Naspash once it's listed in Amsterdam. It could be quite markedly different to the valuation that South African investors have put on Naspash to date. So that's our winner this week, Bob van Dijk, the CEO of Naspash. And our loser this week is Google, because this week marks the end. the nail in the coffin of once very promising service called Google Plus. It shuts down this Tuesday, I think, is the last day. And it's gone. Are you going to miss it?
What was Google Plus again? I can't even remember.
It was that attempt to take on Facebook.
But the Zuck killed it.
Yeah.
No, don't miss it.
Yeah, it's gone. No, I suspect no one cares. But Google really has not had success in social media, has it?
It had a lot. Yeah, it hasn't. But it had a lot of success with SEO guys, from what I believe. A lot of it was used very successfully to publish content on there, and it got good numbers. So okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was a Google thing or if it's.
Tech Central still posts all its stories onto Google Plus, so we'll stop doing that this week when it closes down. I've always wondered whether Google gives favored nation status to publishers that put stuff onto Google Plus, but
we'll never know now.
We'll never know. Right, you've got an interesting sounding pick this week. What is it?
So, Duncan, why do you get the gamer that's got everything?
An NVIDIA GeForce 2080 Ti.
Yeah, that's a good call. But what if you do – that's not a bad gift. But if you want to one-up that thing, you get the Acer Predator Triton 900. Now, listen to these specs. This thing's got a Core i7 8750 processor, so that's a nice high-end. 32 gigs of RAM. It's got two 512 gigabyte SSD drives. SSD and NVMe, should be noted.
And
then it has got, under the hood, RTX 2080 graphics card. Now, keep in mind, this is a notebook. And then the final nice little feature that this thing has got that kind of blows my mind is its beautiful screen that flips around and turns this thing into a touchpad, like an iPad-type kind of touchpad device, touchpad notebook. It's got a super high-res 4K screen. I mean, this thing is absolutely beautiful.
Sounds stunning.
It is. It's probably the most high – well, it is the most high-spec, high-performance notebook I've ever looked at. This thing is an absolute killer.
How long does the battery last if you unplug it from the mains and fire up Battlefield 5?
Okay, so what should be noted is these machines, gaming notebooks aren't really designed to game without
power.
It being plugged in. Your graphics card will either throttle down completely or switch over to the NVIDIA internal graphics card to preserve power. So yeah, you're not going to be running full RTX on Battlefield graphics with battery power. I mean, if you could, you can probably override it. If you could, it'll probably be a 20-minute experience, I guess.
So this is like a portable computer, gaming computer, more than notebook.
Yes, gaming computer, obviously, but keep in mind, for people that edit video or people that need a kind of a high-spec machine with kind of top-end graphics, lots of memory, a really good graphics card, this is the type of machine they'll go for. What I like about this thing is it's kind of thin. It's a really thin notebook. It doesn't weigh as much as what you think, especially not considering the hardware that it's got in. And you should also check out a picture of this thing because it's got a very interesting design. Like I said, the screen swivels around, but like you know a normal computer where the touchpad is between you and the screen, the keyboard is now actually sitting at the bottom where your touchpad normally is. Mm. On the top, you've got this really cool translucent design where you can see some of the internals. And then your touchpad is situated to the immediate right of the computer, of the wrist pad. And then the touchpad also flips, turns into a keypad, you know, a digital keypad. It's a very cool design, very cool idea. I'm pretty blown away. But unfortunately, for $4,000, which is probably going to be, what, like 60, 65 grand in South Africa, maybe a bit
more.
Or more. This isn't your average kind of let's just go and get a notebook this month. But, you know, you're paying for the specs. This thing isn't going to, you're not going to need to upgrade your machine for a while. Because a 2080 is pretty high end. And you don't really need something like that for a gamer. But the fact that, you know, a lot of software developers still need to develop, you know, cool software for that new technology, the longevity of this will certainly be there. It's a 17-inch screen, I should be noted. It's a 17-inch screen.
So is the target market here pro gamers, people who go to gaming tournaments to compete?
No, I wouldn't say. No? Yeah, look, there's a small fraction of those guys. It's partly. Look, these companies need to create kind of the ultimate product, right?
This is a showcase.
It's a showcase product, which is available. I don't think they sell thousands, but there is a niche market of guys that want. And I would recommend. I would probably say you'd have more Hollywood animators buying stuff like this than you would have hardcore gamers.
Right.
But it's you still have, you know, gamers with money will buy something like this because this is at the moment one of the best machines out there.
Yeah.
But you're buying it for the power. You want to do video editing on this for that screen. That 4K screen is absolutely beautiful. It's the first time I've seen a gaming notebook that flips into a, you know, touchscreen device. So it's unique. I don't know. You'll probably see a bigger audience for this thing. You know, your executive who wants just the best, nicest looking machine that runs Windows and, you know, maybe play the odd game of Doom after work.
The most important question, of course, is how does it run Minesweeper?
Oh, it is fantastic. Does Windows 10 have Minesweeper in it? I actually don't know.
I think you can download it in the store. And you can certainly download the old Solitaire game in the store. So I'm sure Minesweeper's there as well.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah. Just for nostalgic.
My record in Minesweeper, by the way, on the easy level is 7 seconds. it took me years of practice to get there.
Jeez, yeah, no. I never got into that.
Oh, I loved Minesweeper. I loved Minesweeper. When did they first introduce it? It was in Windows 3.1 or something.
Jeez, yeah. I was trying to break software and make things happen in the back end rather than playing Minesweeper when I sat in front of the computer.
Cool.
Now one last thing I wanted to mention on this that is very cool, and it adds a new functionality to the screen being able to flip around, is that you can actually connect an Xbox One wireless controller to it. It's got this little dongle on this little slot on the side that you can actually connect your controller directly into. So if you flip this thing over into a screen only, you've got a pretty nice gaming environment. If you know what I'm saying, with a controller. So it's kind of like a console PC based hybrid device. So if you're into gaming and high end stuff, it's a very good option. And now I'm done.
Great. So my pick this week is, I don't know if you know, Rehan, I'm a bit of a weather geek. I almost went to study meteorology at the University of Pretoria when I finished school. Decided to go into journalism instead. I don't know what I was thinking. These brilliant two apps that work on both Android and iOS and the web for that matter, Venture Sky and Windy. My favorite of the two is Venture Sky. Brilliant apps and websites that show you the most detailed information about global weather, from wind speed around the world and beautiful pictorial representations. So, you know, that cyclone that hit Mozambique, Idai, that hit Beira a few weeks ago, I was watching that in Venture Sky and Windy coming down the Mozambique Channel, and you can drill right into it, see wind peak wind speeds around the core of the cyclone, watch its movement, watch its forecast track, so you can set the forecast into the future to see where it's likely to go. And you can do this with any weather system around the world. You can zoom all the way out, see the whole planet, where it's raining in the world, where the winds are blowing, ocean.
It's all live.
It's all live data. Ocean temperatures.
Wow.
You name it, you can. You can drill in and get the information. My personal favorite is Venture Sky, but Windy is also very good. There are a couple of others out there. There's one called Earth as well, which is a little trickier to use, but also very good, mainly for wind speed. But fantastic apps. So if you're in any way interested in the weather are keen to just have a look at what's happening around the world, and particularly, you know, going down and having a look at cyclones, especially when they're in our area out of interest, both apps are very good and I can highly recommend them. So it's Vent U Sky, and Windy. Great apps. Those are my picks this week.
I'm looking at the site now. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
It's stunning. Hey, which one are you on? Venture Sky.
Yeah. I think you may have mentioned this before because it looks familiar.
I may have.
But it's a beautiful, yeah. I mean, just the way that it shows the wind direction. I'm just looking at the clouds here, for example. That's always interesting to see. Where's the cloud cover coming from, or where's the cloud coming from, where's it going? That type of gives you a good basic indication of the weather.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see it very easily displayed here. I like it.
And if you look at the rainfall, the precipitation, it's not going to be deadly accurate. So, if you drill it 2 hours in the future and it suggests it's raining over Joburg, it means there's probably a chance of rain, but it's not necessarily actually raining. Mm. It just gives you a kind of a view of where the rain is roughly. It's not a radar. So it's not going to give you an exact representation of exactly where the rain is, but it's still
but it does have a radar feature.
I saw that, but it may work better in places like the US and Europe, where that information is more readily available. The South African Weather Service does have radars around the country, but they tend to keep that information proprietary behind a firewall. So
We forgot they own the weather, right?
Yeah. I think they sell it on subscription to aviators and to the airports and stuff. It would be great if they did make that info available to services like VentureSky, but I think they profit from it, so they probably won't do that. So if you look at the radar in VentureSky for Europe and the US, you'd probably find that is actually accurate radar, whereas here it's not. And that, Potram, our song pick, which is mine this week, is our show. Shall we do our quiz results quickly?
Our quiz results.
Our first question this week was, who was this week appointed as interim ICASA chair following the axing of Ruben Mohler-Locha? And that is Kia Betswe Modi Moeng.
The second question, Naspers this week announced it would list its international assets on which stock exchange in a bid to unlock shareholder value? And the answer is Euronext Amsterdam.
And who has replaced Satumo Mohapi as CEO of the state IT agency on an interim basis? And that is strategic stakeholder management executive Ntutule Chenye.
The fourth question, how much, including bonuses, was MTN Group CEO Rob Schutte paid in the 2018 financial year, according to its annual report? And the answer is a whopping $42.9 million.
Yep, he can afford the next iPhone.
And the iPad. And the subscription services.
Everything. Give him one of everything, as Oprah. Did you see Oprah at the end of the keynote this week?
No, I didn't.
She came on stage and she said something very, I don't know, it was... She was waffling, just talking meaningless stuff, I thought. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of, she's standing on stage there looking all prim and proper, and I was just waiting for her to say, and an iPhone for you, and you over there, an iPhone for you. I was kind of disappointed when
Imagine,
she did it.
There is a fun in that. Oprah.
Yeah, indeed. And the last question in this week's quiz, Standard Bank Group this week said it would partner with which technology company as it looks to move many of its IT systems into the cloud, and that's Amazon Web Services. And that's our show this week. Rechard, you went to the Cure concert. When was it? Last week?
2 weeks ago now. Two weeks ago. Was it last week? No, 2 weeks ago now, I think. Right?
Okay. How was it?
It could have been last week. I actually don't know. It was very good. It was fantastic. Yeah, I loved it.
Okay. I didn't go.
I'm a relatively new fan, but yeah, if you didn't go, you missed out. If you're a music fan, it was fantastic.
I'm sure. I was a big fan of their album Disintegration, which was, I think was released around the late 80s, early 90s. Late 80s, I think it was. 1989. And I listened to this album nonstop for a year. I enjoyed it so much. I never really got into their other stuff. I'm not sure why, but this album just really appealed to me. So I'm going to play out in honor of The Cure being in South Africa this last week. I'm going to play out with a song of the Disintegration album. It's called Pictures of You. Until next time, from Rechard and myself. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.